Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Baltimore Sports Talk with your hosts Rob McQuay and Jeff Coles, also featuring Philly Jeff Dye. Now, get your game on.
And it is a beautiful day in the Charm City. Low humidity, not a cloud in the sky, and it's summertime. Well, just about June 6th. I'm Rob McQuay. Jeff Coles is my co-host, and you're listening to Baltimore Sports Talk here on Blog Talk Radio, MQFL Network. And Jeffrey, we got lots to talk about today, and we're going to start with the passing of Cassius Clay, otherwise known as Muhammad Ali. And, you know, part of this discussion, we're going to bring in Philly Jeff, since he's just joined us. And because I'm sure Philly Jeff has memories of Ali. I know you do. My memories are really more of Howard Cosell and Ali than maybe just Ali.
Well, you couldn't really have one without the other now, could you, Rob? You know,
well, it seems like that's true.
Makes me feel so old.
Yeah. They were a great act, you know. And after all, it is entertainment, and I know it's sports and competitive and in that way serious, but they were also very, very entertaining.
Yeah. And absolutely. I mean, Ali was a great promoter of his own fights, and Howard Cosell was a perfect foil for him, you know, going at each other with their verbal sparring, and of course, guys like Joe Frazier, you know, who, you know, were you know, again, so perfect for him to bounce insults and all kinds of, you know, things off of, you know, but Ali was one of a kind.
And having said that, let's bring in Philly Jeff Dye to talk about the great one, Muhammad Ali.
Ali is raining. Blows on Frazier.
Oh, yeah.
Well, I mean, but, you know, I read you introduced him as Cassius Clay, but I just read an article the other day that talked about fighting a guy named I want to say Eugene Terrell, and Terrell would not refer to him as Muhammad Ali. And so in the kind of the pre-fight thing, Ali was saying, "What's my name?" And then eventually he dragged that into the fight when he was starting to beat the hell out of this guy, except he wasn't beating the hell out of this guy, you know, but his calling card was, "What's my name? What's my name?" And, you know, Ali confessed. He said, I rarely, you know, beat up on anybody. You know, the fights tended to be the full, the full nine yards, largely based on decision rather than knockout. But that does not tarnish who this man was.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, for me, of course, the first half of his career, the pre-Vietnam part of his career was not, I was too young for that, but sure. The post-Vietnam, to the entire comeback, from his very first fight, I remember that part of it from the first time he came back. And, obviously the first Frazier fight and the second Frazier fight, but the thing that really impressed me the most and the thing that will always stay with me is the fact that George Foreman he was like the Terminator. I mean, he was indestructible, and what he did to Frazier in their championship fight was so one-sided. And I really was afraid for Ali when they went against each other in Zaire.
I guess, again, I'm relatively young as far as that era of boxing goes, but it seems to me that Ali was the guy that really brought professional boxing into the mainstream. I know boxing was big then, but with the commercials that he did, the whole, sting like a butterfly and float like a butterfly, sting like a bee, all of that. And what commercial was it that he did that with? I can't even remember. But it seems that he really brought that more into our living rooms than maybe previously had been. Now, I could be wrong about that, but that's kind of how I remember it at my age.
Boxing in the 50s, you had the Friday night fights, and it was sort of a regular thing, but it had kind of fallen off a little bit before Ali, just took it on his back.
Mm-hmm.
And what a bunch of heavyweights that we had going against each other over that maybe 10-year period, your Foremans and Norton and Frazier and Ernie, guys like Ernie Shavers, who were so good, and they made it was just a tremendous, they were champions, on their own, and then Ali was a champion of champions, which, really says something. But to say, when I first saw Ali and Foreman in the ring together, they looked about the same size, and Ali had a little more reach. And at that point, I started to get a little confidence there in Ali because Foreman had just outsized and outfought Frazier so hard.
Yeah.
I still have that image, and then it started. I started to be a little less fearful for Ali. When I saw them together, and obviously Ali won, but it was such the anticipation of that fight was that Ali was going to take get punished.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, folks, we're talking about the passing of Muhammad Ali. Any memories that you might have, you can give us a call at 323-410-0028. You can jump in the chat room, send us a comment or a question. We got a lot to talk about, but right now we're remembering Muhammad Ali. Philly Jeff.
I wanted to.
Oh, go ahead, Jeff Coles. Go ahead.
Okay, well, just real quickly, can anyone think, you got the thrill of Manila, and that was the last Frazier fight. Can you think of any event that was so greatly hyped, and yet when the event took place, it actually exceeded the hype?
No, that's interesting. I don't think I can. I don't know. That's an interesting point, because you're right. Most of the time, these events that get all hyped will fall a little bit short. I mean, maybe they'll live up to it. Or, yes, right. But to exceed it, yeah, you're right. I can't think of one off the top of my head.
No.
So, interesting. Very interesting. All right, any other remembrances? I mean, I don't have a whole lot. I mean, I remember watching the fights, but my brain just wasn't on that at that age. Now, Philly Jeff, you're a couple of years older, so
you may have
a few more memories. I don't know.
Pushing me over the cliff of age. Thank you so much. Well, keep in mind, I mean, because I grew up in Philadelphia, so did Joe Frazier, and that was it was difficult because, you know, we appreciated that Ali was that great a fighter, but, you know, he was up against our hometown, you know, guy, so it was hard to root against Frazier because it would be like rooting against, you know, anything in Philadelphia. That would have been the big
Rocky
challenge,
Balboa.
But, you know. But then again, it's well, exactly. I mean, that's exactly what it is. That's why Rocky was able to become that whole franchise was exactly that. He's this guy from Philadelphia, who, you know, or what was the movie a couple of years ago, Invincible, the Joe Papale story. That was only going to work because he was this no-name guy that you know, in Philadelphia, and then you know, they had that kind of that walk-on thing where he was able to get onto the team and. You know, played for a couple of years, but again, it's Philadelphia movies have a tendency to show that this kind of this no name from nowhere who makes good and that's I think that's you know why it was very difficult to see Frazier lose because it was such a hard thing in Philly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. All right, Jeff Cole. Any final thoughts on Ali?
Yeah, you know, I cannot think of another person in any sport, and probably in any walk of life, who transcended not just sport, but you know, politics, religion, and everything else, and was able to be who is able to touch this as many people as Muhammad Ali has.
Mm. Interesting. Nice. All right. Let's switch gears. And, you know, I guess at this point, this is probably wall-to-wall baseball, unless anybody wants to talk about the NBA.
Baseball?
Yeah, right.
And there it is.
I haven't looked at this. Really follow it, but is hockey done with now? Did someone win?
No, it's 2-1. No. Penguins, best of 7, so they're still hanging in there.
Yeah,
I tell you, you know, people complain about the baseball season, but the basketball and hockey season seem like they go on forever.
They're going right into the summer now, almost.
They actually are longer than the baseball season if you take out the well. I guess if you include the playoffs, baseball does tend to sneak into November. But, I mean, hockey and basketball start early October, and they're still going in June. So, it's too long.
They're playing ice hockey in June.
Yeah,
there's something wrong.
They're playing a lot because they have such long playoffs now, and you know, so many tiers in the – you know, in their playoffs, they got like what 16 teams you know, to start.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. All right.
Well, they scheduled the Stanley Cup for 17 possible days, 2.5 weeks for a playoff. I mean, playoff.
Yeah, playoff.
But playoff. Anyway, did we say baseball? Yes, we did.
We did.
Yes, we did.
All right. Well, the Orioles take 2 out of 3 from the Yankees in comeback style last night, and I'm still not convinced that they couldn't have swept that game. That series, that middle game. I think here's one where I love Buck Showalter, but here's one where I think he may have lost that game for the Orioles by his pitching decisions. Particularly middle to late game with pulling Dunsing. But that's another thing we can talk about. But so the Orioles take 2 out of 3 from the Yankees. They stay in a dead heat with the Red Sox just percentage points ahead of them. So here we are. It's early June, and the Orioles are still, in first or second place in the division. And, they've been kind of back and forth with the Red Sox. And they are, what are they, I need to look at it. They're 8 games, 9 games over
I think it was like seven games. Is it seven or eight games?
Let me grab the. Let's see. They're.
I think they're one game over since they were 7-0.
They're 32. They're 32-23. They're nine. They're nine games.
Oh, okay.
Right? Is my math correct on that? 23 plus 9 is 32. Yeah.
Right.
They're nine games over.
So they're basically 500 since the that opening run.
Mm-hmm.
Well.
Basically.
Maybe,
a little over 500.
A little bit better than 500.
And watch out for those Canadian team. They're trying to sneak quickly back into this.
They are, and they're playing well. And look, the Yankees are playing well. I mean, they've dug themselves a hole, but they have been playing very good as of late.
Except at first base, where their batting average is .145.
Yeah.
Ouch.
Well, Teixeira.
Oh, what a shame.
Teixeira and A-Rod.
Yeah. All right, last night's game, kind of interesting. He could not hit Sabathia at all. And the Orioles in the past have had some success against him, but he was bringing it. And
He got us earlier in the season, too. He tied
us up. The irony of that game is that generally you with the Yankees, you can – jump on top of their starting pitching, and you better have scored the runs that you need by the time you get into their bullpen, because Chapman
Miller.
and Miller,
Andrew Miller,
those guys are just complete shutdowns. But the Orioles were able to get on top of Chapman last night, and push a couple of runs across the board. Gausman, I guess. Pitched very well. I mean, the Orioles staff only gave up one run, and so that's a positive.
He struggled a little bit, but he fought through it.
Yeah,
Gausman did.
Well, Gausman has been that this year's hard luck guy, where he can't get any run support, and he pitches for the most part. He's been pitching well. He just hasn't got any run support. So,
and all his run support came in like two games, and everything else. I mean. Has been like practically nil.
Right. Interesting to see the Korean Hyunsu Kim, who has been on air, and we all talked about him not taking a demotion and how stupid it was in the Orioles.
That took guts.
Yeah. The Orioles trying to find ways of maybe getting rid of it or whatever, and I think it's almost like begrudgingly Buck put him in there, and as soon as he did, all the guys done is hit. So now he looks like the guy that they went out and signed from Korea.
And I'll tell you what, right now I spent the early part of the season, the late spring training campaigning for Joey Rickert to be number one hitter, and now I'm going to start campaigning for Kim to be in the number two slot because he has got the best inside-out swing. He and Rickert foul off pitches. I mean, they're the kind of guys that can give you a good look at a starting pitcher and can take them down, consume 15 or 20 pitches at the beginning of the lineup.
Why not, and I don't think this has been brought up or addressed, but why not put him in the leadoff spot?
Hyunsu Kim?
Yeah.
That's an interesting one, too.
I mean, I think that
would be a good...
Buck has put Adam Jones in there for the last, handful of games, which is interesting. I mean, the thing that you get out of Adam Jones is his aggressiveness.
Sure.
But
what you get
Kim
out of Rickert...
Go ahead.
I guess what you get out of Rickert is the fact that what was it? It was a couple of nights ago. He came up and he basically he forced the pitcher to throw like 12 pitches at each of his first two times up at the plate. I think by the time that he had thrown about 60 pitches, I think 20 of them or more like had been thrown just to Rickard.
But Joey Rickard hasn't been leading off. Adam has. In fact, Joey Rickard's been benched. I mean, yesterday he was, I believe he was in the starting lineup, but he got benched for a couple of games. So,
yeah, because he hasn't been hitting as much, but I think he does a lot of other things that you want to have. And he'll start getting hits again. I think the hits will come for a guy like that.
Yeah. I'm just thinking that it seems like Kim has – I got to look at the numbers and all, but it seems like he has a much better on on-base average. I mean, he's getting the hits, so why not lead him off? I would say maybe, you know, put Manny back at number two or Jones at two, Manny at three. You could flip-flop those. Davis at four, Trumbo at five. And I would think about maybe putting Rickard in that nine spot so that you've got that, you know, the kind of those back-to-back leadoff type hitters. And being number nine, Joe's going to, you know, it's not quite as pressure-oriented and that kind of thing. So I don't know. But, you know, I'm really happy
to see that Kim has you know, come along the way as quickly as he has, because I didn't think that he would, you know, adjust this quickly and start hitting this well. I wouldn't be sad to put him in number one at all.
Right. Philly Jeff, you got any thoughts on this? I don't know if you've been following these guys that much or.
Well, I mean, the best move the Orioles made this offseason, short of getting rid of their entire pitching staff, is Trumbo. That guy.
God,
every time I turn around, the guy's on base. He's knocking the runs in. I mean, you know, what a value that guy's been. You know,
yeah.
I mean, they'll, you know, it's a team effort. That is true. But where would they be without Trumbo? You know,
and he's not bad with the glove.
Right.
Exactly. I mean, he's a good combo. You know, and along those lines, we had to say goodbye over on my side of the scape, if that's the way to put it. Had to say goodbye to David Lowe. They never gave him a real chance, and they gave him the old DFA tag, and off he went. And then they brought in Mr. Paredes, and last night, bless him, he after a home run was to the guy before him, Tommy Joseph, was ruled a double because of fan interference after it was a three-run home run. Paredes said, well, look, no problem. Still got two guys on, right? So let me hit the three-run home run. So that was nice to see.
Yeah. And next up will be Ryan Flaherty. We'll get him over
Ryan
to the Phillies.
He's already on his way.
he plays what? Can he play second base?
Yeah.
Yeah, he can play.
He
can
play.
He's the
backup for every position the Orioles have. Either second.
You're right.
He
has actually played outfield. You're right.
Yeah, that's right.
You're right. So
we can put him in a second base. That would be okay.
Yeah. But you know, you might as well. David Lowe, Jimmy Paredes, Ryan Flaherty. You know, take
Manny
them
Machado.
All.
Just do the.
Now that is not.
What do they call
that
in horse racing? The trifecta. That would be the superfecta.
Yeah.
We'll toss him in. You know, Ryan Flaherty, and we'll toss in Machado to sweeten the deal a little bit. And I'm trying to think.
We'll give you a ball.
Oh my God! It was like yesterday.
All right.
Aaron Nola. You know, he had one of those games where he pitched six innings. He had two runners on every inning. So it was quite exciting.
How did he do, though?
But he ended up with a win. He gave up zero runs.
Zero runs
with two guys on every inning for six innings.
You know, he's one of
wow.
He's one of my fantasy pitchers, you know. So,
yeah. Well, it's like Don Stanhouse for 9 innings.
Yeah. And it was 8 hits, 2 walks, but 9 strikeouts. So when he had to, he did.
Yeah. Mm-mm-mm.
So.
I've got, are you guys, any of you guys watch MLB Network on cable?
No.
I listen to it on the radio.
Yeah. You got to tune in at 10 o'clock sometime. Lauren Shahadi is just one very nice-looking woman. Okay.
Okay.
Oh, well, okay. What was that time? 10 o'clock?
That means I'm going to slap down the money now and get MLB.com.
But does she know what she's talking about? You know, there are plenty of pretty women on ESPN that don't know anything. It's like, go away.
Yeah, I know, of course. Well,
if she knows her stuff, fine.
Yeah, I don't know.
Okay, so what are we going to do about Ubaldo Jimenez?
Yes, you brought him up. Ubaldo Jimenez. Here's what I think, Jeff. Here's what I think.
Yeah.
I think at maybe the fifth inning, you start your bullpen. Because you know, unless he's already gotten in trouble. I mean, you know, Ubaldo, he either starts out great and then it, you know, the sixth inning falls apart. Or he doesn't start out great and you've got to go to you know, Vance Worley or whoever, TJ McFarlane, you know, the long guy in the second inning anyway.
Right.
But if he's pitching well, I say at the fifth inning, Buck, you start your bullpen and you're ready. And I would say in that, whether the fifth inning or the sixth inning, whatever it is, when he gets, you know, a runner or two on, you go get him. You pull him and you put the bullpen in because you know what's happening.
Yeah. And obviously they don't know what is happening to Ubaldo. I mean, they just react when he's already when the game's out of hand. It's not like you can tell his sinker isn't doing what it normally should do, or whether he's tipping his pitch, or whether he's got some kind of head issue. They don't know that. The only way they know that is after other teams had like about 6 or 7 hits and they scored like 3 or 4 runs.
Yeah, well, that's why I'm saying it. I think you've got to manage preventively, proactively, and you start somebody, you know, before he gets in trouble.
You know, when we were coming up, Rob, you know, how many decisions did a manager have to make? You know, maybe around the eighth inning, he would have to maybe decide whether he's going to stick Mike Lum in the pinch hit or whatever. Most of the time those guys are going 9 innings, you know, and now there's so many decisions that have to be made. I mean, I made a point of, earlier with you about Clayton Kershaw. The guy gave up 2 walks all of last month,
right.
and he's in a game against the Mets. Eighth inning, they pull him, put in a reliever to face Curtis Granderson, who's hitting 205, and Kershaw goes to the dugout with a 1-run lead, and the first thing they do is they give the reliever gives up a triple, an RBI triple to Granderson. They tie the game, and I'm sure Kershaw was just fuming.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, all these decisions you have to make now as a manager, my point being that things like trying to figure out, you know, what's wrong with Ubaldo Jimenez. What you said about being a proactive manager, you got to do that. And I mean, that used to get you called like Sparky Anderson, Captain Hook. But now, you know, that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Well, I think you got to know your personnel, and you manage to that personnel. And it's obvious that Ubaldo, if he's pitching well, is only going to pitch 5 good innings. When you get into that sixth inning, he's going to get in trouble. And unless you have a 10-run lead, you know, you got to think about getting him out. And that, you know, that goes to the final point, I guess, today, because we're running out of time. But I just feel like major league managers in this day and age, because of the specialists, you know, the relievers and the closers and all that stuff, they sometimes just outthink themselves, you know, and I think that's what Clark did the other night when he pulled Dunsing out to put Vance Ward, and in my estimation, gave up the game.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, Philly Jeff.
Yep.
You got about, well, you got no time, but, you know, briefly, just bring us up to speed with the Phillies. They seem to be up and down, it seems to me, as I kind of watch them from afar.
Well, they had to play the Cubs and the Nationals back-to-back, and, you know, that's difficult for anybody. The thing is, they're kind of the Orioles right now. If they had a stronger pitching staff, I think that would help. But they're also a young team, you know, trying to figure some things out. And, you know, they'll be okay. But to your other Ubaldo thing, you know what? Get rid of him. Why do you have to keep apologizing for this guy? Even if you brought somebody up from AAA, can't be any worse. Honest to God. I mean, this guy has been on borrowed time since just about maybe the year or so after they got him in. You know, for paying $48 million, he hasn't earned that contract. You know, let him go. Yeah. I got no issues with letting these guys go, period.
Yeah, well, obviously I think money's going to play into that. I think that may have been part of the management thinking, hoping that Tyler Wilson and Mike Wright would do well on the major league level. And it also, let's not forget, Giovanni Gallardo, you know, he was supposed to be somebody that was going to come in and help solidify the starting rotation. And if you've got a healthy Gallardo that's pitching well, and you've got these kids, Wilson and Wright, that are pitching well, now you can go ahead and move Ubaldo into the bullpen, and not have to rely on him every fifth day, because then you've got Tillman, Gausman, Gallardo, Wilson, and Wright as your starters. But that hasn't worked out, and they had to send Mike Wright down after his last outing because he got completely shelled. Tyler Wilson is still trying to learn. And so, you know, they got to, at this point, they got to kind of hold on to Ubaldo and get what they can get out of him. But I say, get that bullpen going early.
Yeah. Two and a half men.
Yeah, take the four innings or the five innings that he gives you that are strong, if he's giving it to you then, and then get him out of there. So that's kind of where we are, I think, with that. All right, gentlemen, we're out of time. We gotta run. And we'll see the Kansas City Royals coming into town to play the Baltimore Orioles the next several games. So that'll be interesting. Final thoughts at all? Jeff Coles.
Just farewell to a great legend.
Indeed. Indeed. Philly Jeff.
Well, I think Rob started off incorrectly, and I guess my boxing career ended early because floated like a bee and stung like a butterfly. So I guess I had no chance at all.
Yeah, and I when I was in the ring, I always said, "What's my name?" But that was because I was hit so many times in the head, I didn't remember.
I just never got in the ring, so there you are. All right, folks, that's going to do it for this edition of Baltimore Sports Talk here on MQFL Live, blogtalkradio.com. Have a great week, and we'll talk to you all next week. Have a good one.
Thanks for listening to Baltimore Sports Talk here on MQFL Live on the blogtalkradio.com network. Join us again next week as we explore Baltimore sports.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Boombox Carrying Roller Skater.
Mr. Boombox Carrying Roller Skater.
Shunning the conveniences of modern inline skates, you prove that real men do it on eight pink polypropylene wheels.
A pretty pink wheel.
The crouched one-leg extension, the squat and spin, every move as tight as your shorts.
A giddy old cowboy.
Yes, your station is tuned to all disco all the time. And bravely, so is your haircut. So crack open a nice cold Bud Light, Mr. Boombox Carrying Roller Skater, and know that we fully support real artistic expression. But enough about that. Let's roller skate.
Mr. Boombox Carrying Roller Skater.
Bud Light, beer, and I suppose Houston, Texas.